Welcome to Adult Siblings Versus, a podcast where a grown-ass brother and sister put aside their childhood rivalry in order to review nostalgic pieces of pop culture. I am your co-host, Jason S. Leverett.
And I'm your other co-host, Ariel Leverett.
So, Ariel, I assume from the listener's point of view, if they're listening on a regular basis, to them there's been a bit of a gap.
Yes.
A bit of a gap. However, for us, it's been an enormous gap. This is the first time that we've recorded something since Much Ado About Nothing, which itself was us having, after taking a little break, we hadn't recorded anything for like 2 months before that. So we're now, like, from the listener's point of view, our last episode was Atlantis, but I think we recorded that in like July or maybe August.
Yeah.
And it's January now.
It was definitely sweet summertime. And now we're at, well, I was going to say we're in the bowels of winter, but all things considered, the weather isn't really that bad right now.
So, yeah, we've, things have just gone by. So, and the only reason I remember anything that we talked about in those episodes is because I recently recorded, edited them. So I remember a lot more. I feel bad for you.
I mean, I remember because I was doing my usual podcast advertising to my coworkers, and I found myself going on yet another rant about Atlantis, which no one asked for.
No one asks for a rant about Atlantis, so there you go. In any event, we are now in the halfway mark of our Disney experimental era examination, where we're looking at key Disney movies from the post-Disney Renaissance era. Not all of them, the way we went through the Renaissance. Like, we definitely skipped Dinosaur, we definitely skipped Fantasia 2000, and we are skipping a bunch of other ones. Or I shouldn't say skip, we're just not gonna do it. We're not covering Brother Bear. Not,
yeah,
not right now.
And like, I would like to say that, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily want to do Fantasia 2000 because I really don't know how I talk about it. But because I like, you know, musical expression, I did very much enjoy Fantasia 2000 when it came out. Maybe it's no Fantasia, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, it's pretty.
There's less racism.
There's a lot less racism. And, like,
2000.
The Firebird at the end, like, legit makes me cry. I think even in recent years when I rewatched it, it still makes me cry.
Any case, here's what we're doing today. This is how, actually, because that's what I'm trying to get to. So today, we are doing Lilo and Stitch, and I don't believe it's a controversial statement for me to say that this is the only success Disney had from this era that wasn't a Pixar movie.
I mean, success enough that I definitely went on a Lilo and Stitch, or I guess a Stitch ride at Disney World. I remember doing that in 2011. Yeah.
So today we're just looking at the original movie, but just so you guys understand, because, you know, some Disney movies might have an animated series. Like, you know, The Emperor's New Groove had an animated series, but it wasn't necessarily a successful movie. Atlantis, I don't know if I mentioned this, the sequel to Atlantis, was like Milo's Return or whatever, was actually the first three episodes of a series that never actually went through.
Womp womp.
So obviously when these movies were coming out, someone at Disney was like making steps to make TV shows. So maybe it's not super impressive that Lilo and Stitch had their own TV show. But on top of the TV show, or excuse me, on top of the original movie, there was a sequel in 2003. The series followed that sequel. That sequel was like a pilot for the series that came out later that year. A second sequel.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, they have Stitch exclamation point, but then yes, Lilo and Stitch too.
Yeah, I guess I'll explain that in a second. But but then they got a third sequel on top of that. So just so you guys know, so Lilo and Stitch is the first movie. Lilo and Stitch 2, Stitch Has a Glitch, which came out in 2005. That is a direct sequel that that doesn't take the other stuff into consideration. So the timeline is Lilo and Stitch 2, then go back to 2003, Stitch the movie, and then Leroy and Stitch, the last film. It's the finale movie.
I was sure Leroy and Stitch was about is going to be about Stitch making friends with a black man, like an old black man who plays the blues, and I was very sad that that was not the case.
No, no, it's not at all. In addition to that, there's an anime series called Stitch that came out in Japan in 2008 that takes place many years later. Stitch has found a new friend in Japan. Lilo guest stars in one in like an episode closer to the end of the series where she's an adult and she has a daughter who looks exactly like she did in the movies. It's crazy. And there's a Chinese cartoon series called Stitch and I, which came out in 2017.
Wow.
So this had a lot of shit like coming out of it. Like the sheer amount of volume of spinoffs and sequels to this is actually higher than almost any other Disney property I can think of, like from their that started off as an animated film. Like short of getting a theatrical sequel, which was something that was pretty unheard of. It was very I think Rescuers Down Under was like the only one for many years until like the second renaissance, I guess we call it, when we're starting to see, you know, Frozen 2 and Wreck-It Ralph 2.
I guess that kind of makes sense to me because, like, you know, most of the other Disney movies, like main Disney movies, don't have like a cute animal-like thing as like the center. Like, you know, people have sidekicks, but I feel like having the focus be on like cute blue thing Stitch, we can make so much money off of him. Like, I guess that kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Only worked because this movie was, like I said, a success. So like we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. I've already kind of like spent I think roughly 35 minutes talking about nothing. So a little business to take care of. If you'd like to get a hold of us, you can reach us at adultsiblingsversus@gmail.com if you want to send us a little note. You can also reach out to us at on Twitter at adultversus. We actually got a request for an episode on Twitter not too long ago. Our schedule has been so crazy that I haven't actually got a chance to let you like to bring it up to you, like to talk to you about like what that was. But they asked us to do The Mask or Ferngully, and I told them Ferngully was more likely.
Ooh, I would love to do. Thanks for reaching out. I would love to do an episode of Ferngully, which will also include me ranting about Avatar. You know, Blue Avatar.
Oh yeah.
We should have
just done that in December.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That would have been very funny. It's like, in honor of Avatar, we're going to do the real first Avatar movie, Ferngully. And it's always, you know, cool chatting with you all, like, listeners. Like, I had a lovely chat with one of our listeners, Kit, who about, like, Shakespeare stuff, because we did Much Ado, and that was really fun. So, like, it's cool to reach out, and thanks for the request also.
Yep. All right, let's we're running a little behind, so let's go ahead and get right to details of this movie. So Ariel, you kind of said it at the beginning of this. This is not necessarily a movie that you had a lot of experience with, it sounded like.
Yeah, the timing is thus, because it came out in 2002, which meant that I feel like I was of an age where even though I did, you know, technically like watching Disney cartoons, I didn't want to seem too babyish. Because, you know, it's like either I was at the end of middle school or about to go into high school, whatever time of the year this came out.
Yeah, I think it came out in the summer, so it was you're getting ready to start
high school. Yeah, so I think there was a lot of me being like, I'm a goddamn adult. And trying.
And you didn't have a young. You didn't have a younger sibling to.
Yeah, like I couldn't.
To like kind of send you towards the kid stuff if you were being difficult and teenager about it.
Yeah, I couldn't blame it on a small child. So, and like, Lord knows, I like hardly ever interacted with our then baby cousin. So like, there was no chance for me to to really latch onto this movie.
Had you seen this before at all?
I had. I don't remember when I first watched it. I think I watched it at some point near when it came out. I think it was on somewhere, perhaps even at school, because sometimes they're just like, I don't know, I really hate teaching you guys make movies.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had seen it before, perhaps more in passing than anything.
Yeah, I definitely saw it before myself, but it would have been a couple years after it came out. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember the circumstances where I would have seen it, but I definitely remember watching the whole thing. And I remember being bored a lot when I was watching it.
Yeah.
So it didn't really do anything for me, from what I remember. But it, like I said, you cannot argue with the success of this film. I think maybe part of the problem is that it was everywhere. Oh, you know, what really probably did it for me was like the marketing, which I'll talk about. The marketing for this film was a little weird, and I think it might have just kind of maybe rolled my eyes and it didn't want anything to do with this movie. And then, you know, Stitch becomes this really big marketing, like big merchandise mover for Disney, so he's probably everywhere, and I'm probably a little sick of it at that point. But anyway, let's talk about this movie. So this is like you said, Lilo Stitch is a 2002 movie. Is written and directed by Chris Sanders and Dean Dubois. Is it Dubois? Yeah. It's an L. It's like, I would almost say it's Dubois. But it's like Dubois. Maybe Dubois, Dubois, Dubois. It's like Dubois, but with an L. Dubois? Could be Dubois. I don't know.
See, this is the hard thing where it's just like, yeah, Dubois. I don't know.
So the movie said based on an idea by Chris Sanders, which I thought was a really interesting credit. Apparently, I'll get to a why, but like it's had to do with like I think Chris Sanders was just being a little cheeky with that credit. Anyway, the budget for this movie was $80 million, cheaper than most of the films that we've seen recently in the Disney catalog. But the gross was $273.1 million, which is not, you know, mid-90s Disney Renaissance money. Sure. But it is done better than every single film Disney's put out through their animation studios like for years. Like, this is their biggest hit, especially since the budget was so low. Like, I believe Atlantis was at least $160 million. So, like, we're talking, like, twice. Maybe $140. But it was, like, somewhere between $140 and $160 million. So, twice the budget of this. And it didn't make its budget. Mm-hmm. Like, in the gross. So, this movie has killed Atlantis as far as, like, profitability is gone. So, the original idea for this movie came back in the 90s. Mid-90s, kind of. So, it was a directive from Michael Eisner. Who, by the way... where at this point in 2002, Michael Eisner is not long for Disney, if he's even still there at that point. Like, he ends up losing his job in the early 2000s, and part of it is almost certainly because of how bad these movies are doing. But this is back in the mid-90s. He's like, we want to make a smaller budget animated film. And apparently this idea came from Dumbo. So I'm not sure if you've seen Dumbo lately, but Dumbo is so short, it's barely a movie. And the reason is that that's Disney at the time, and this is like, you know, in the 40s, they're like, let's make a cheap animated film since we just made two really expensive ones in Snow White and Pinocchio. Mm. And so Michael Eisner was like, oh, let's do the same thing. Let's kind of make a smaller budget animated film in between these bigger ones. In fact, I believe Treasure Planet came out the same year as this. So Treasure Planet was probably supposed to be their big tentpole film. We'll talk about that next time. how well that worked out for them. So they asked Chris Sanders, who was a head storyboard artist at the studio, to do a pitch. But he decided to pitch a character that he had created in 1985 for a children's storybook that no one bought. That would be Stitch. So he pitched that to be a movie. So they're like, yeah, sounds good. Go ahead and direct it. So So he got the ball rolling. Dean DeBlois, whichever one, was brought on to be the co-director. By the way, those two guys also directed How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
So, although DeBlois stayed on to direct the next two, where Sanders moved on to other things. I had no idea the same creative team behind Lilo and Stitch also did How to Train Your Dragon. It was actually kind of a surprising thing. Okay, anyway, originally the film was going to be set in Kansas, but then somewhere along the way, Sanders just got the inspiration to do it in Hawaii. They took a team trip to Hawaii, as these animation teams often do, to like the location of places they want to set stuff in. The thing about Hawaii is that they'd never done a movie in Hawaii before, like at Disney's history, despite the fact there's a lot of lore and history tied to those islands. And it was actually kind of a surprise that they'd never done that before.
Yeah.
They would revisit it later. Yeah. But for now, this was kind of the first time doing it.
I would just got to say, it's what a much more pleasant business trip to visit Hawaii than fucking Kansas. Like, I think if I were them, I also would have been like, you know what might be better? Maybe we should set this up in Hawaii, maybe visit there a little bit, really understand the culture for a couple of weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in any event, you know, they go down to Kauai. I hope that's how it's pronounced. I looked it up but Hawaiian pronunciation is not my strong suit. In fact, Hawaii is not how you're pronounced, supposed to pronounce it, so I'm already doing bad. But they were there, and the tour guide, of all people, gave them the pitch of what Ohana meant. And they're like, oh, that sounds great. Family. Oh, family, you say. Oh, yes. And so they got really obsessed with it and decided to make the whole concept of the film based around that. Now, how much they understood about the culture of Hawaii, especially this movie surprisingly takes place in modern day. This is not a common thing. I don't think there has been a modern-day Disney film in many years, like many decades at that point. Like,
I mean,
I don't know. So The Rescuers may have been contemporary at the time. 101 Dalmatians might have been contemporary at the time.
I mean, like, Goofy Movie probably doesn't really count. Oh,
with a different Disney studio. Different studio. Yeah. In any event, I will say this, we're kind of jumping ahead, but the two non-Lilo human leads, like her sister and the boy who's got a crush on his sister.
Nani and David.
Yeah. So they actually hired folks of Hawaiian descent to play those roles.
I saw that.
And apparently they're the ones who had to kind of explain to them certain cultural things and slang and stuff, because it doesn't sound like they did a huge research situation like they've done in other things. And this was definitely sound like it was two white guys making a movie about brown folks.
Oh, 100%. Just that story itself. They're like, oh, Ohana, huh?
Ohana.
Like, who told you that? Like the idea was, it's like their tour guide. Like, they've barely done anything. And they're just like, I think we got it, guys. I think we understand Hawaii. Like, oh, what a bummer.
I will say, not a lot of controversy or craziness in the background of this movie. I feel like the last couple ones, it's been a little wacky.
Yeah.
This one, pretty straightforward. Like, interesting trivia, they used watercolor painting background technology, or techniques, I should say, that Disney had not done since 1945 or so,
because
it was too expensive. And they're like, no, let's do it here. It'll make it look more like a storybook or something. Not a whole lot of controversy there. There was one incident that I say is controversial, but it's not really controversial. It's just a really interesting story, in that, you know, the team had the movie. I think it was really close to being done. So there's a scene where where two aliens, probably the two bumbling aliens who are after Stitch the whole movie, hijack a jumbo airplane and then fly that fucker downtown in a major city. And that was all filmed. It was all done. But then 9/11 happened. Yeah. And Disney probably wisely decided that they probably needed to alter that sequence. To great expense, they ended up redoing that whole sequence. They kept the plane was made to look like a spaceship, but it still has jumbo jet engines, so it still clearly was probably supposed to be that. And then, you know, they changed the background to be, you know, in the unpopulated island that they had been on, as opposed to a major city.
Mm. And they even make a joke about that. It's like, it's a good thing that we live far from a large city. And then Stitch is like, God damn
it. I assume that this sequence would have been involved them going to another island, like for the sequence. But interesting thing about this is that after they redid the sequence, they found themselves with enough money to film two minutes worth of material. Hmm. So they were like, let's film a epilogue. So that whole musical sequence at the end where you see all like the new family established with the aliens and the humans living together. And Vin Rains, all living together,
just bubbles sticking around,
and just having a nice life. That was all added well after the production because they realized they had enough money to do it. So that's just kind of a fun thing.
That's kind
of
nice.
Now, less something more stupid, I would say, is that in the UK when this film was released, they actually they altered one of the sequences. There's a scene where Lilo's hiding in a dryer,
right,
from her sister. Mm-hmm. But I guess because they were worried, people in the UK were worried about kids emulating that, they changed it into a crazy thing where they put it where she's in a cabinet with a pizza box as a goddamn front door.
Well, I was gonna say, like, watching the movie this time, I did notice that. I was like, that's weird that it's like a pizza box thing, but I had forgotten that was a thing, that it used to be a dryer, and that they had changed it. It wasn't until FM mentioned it that I was like, oh, right, I forgot that was like a weird controversy. It's like, don't show a kid climbing in a dryer.
Yeah, so like, here's the weird thing. So that was the UK release. So this was how people in the UK have seen it since 2002. It has never been on a home release in the United States ever. Hmm. However, for some reason, this is the version Disney Plus uses. So if you're watching on Disney Plus, this is what you're going to see. I do not know why they decided to make that change. Disney Plus has a lot of weird choices with some of the versions they use. For example, let's call this the McClunky cut of Lilo and
Disney
Stitch.
Disney Plus is just really worried about dryer babies.
Yeah. All right. One more thing, and this is actually more speculation on my part, but I do want to discuss it because one day we're gonna have to watch Shrek, and I want to make sure I paid as much of the picture as possible before we do it. So, the marketing for this movie is one of the weirder marketing campaigns I've ever seen Disney do for anything. So they released a bunch of teaser trailers that had scenes from a couple of their classic Disney Renaissance films, and then they would have Stitch just crash the scene and make trouble. Yeah. Like they did three of them. I watched all three. There's one, and they're fucking unhinged. Anyway, like, so the version that of Stitch in these ads is actually very different from how he appears in the movie. Like in the ads, he's very crass. He's crass in the film too, but like it's a little different. Like, for example, like he hit on Jasmine and Belle shamelessly. Like he's like like in the Aladdin commercial, he pulls up against the magic carpet and is like, "Hey, baby," and she digs it. She jumps in the ship with him, leaves Aladdin for him. And like the Beauty and the Beast one, he's climbing on the walls of the chandelier and hops on the chandelier during the Beauty and the Beast dance sequence, and he accidentally causes the chandelier to fall on them. They just barely avoid getting killed, and Belle's like, that's it, I'm going to my room. And then Stitch is like, hey, baby, how you doing? And then she's like, get your own movie. It's like, it's just like this weird, like it's kind of hard to explain it, but I feel like the marketing was portraying Stitch in a very specific way, and I think I know why. Because even though this isn't indicative of how he is in the movie, I mean
not the horn dog part, but the crass part for like at least
initial moments. Well, the very initial moment, he says something, but like he's not like, but like this horn dog, like Bugs Bunny esque character that he's portraying in these trailers is not really how he is in the film.
Right.
So here's what I think it is. So the movie's production would have begun well before Shrek came out. But Shrek would have been out for 2 years at this point. And
did Shrek really come out? I don't know if you remember this. I guess it is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, because I remember I used to carpool with our neighbors to, I guess I must have been in middle school. And I remember the girl neighbor who was like six or something just like quoted that stupid movie word for word all the time. It was annoying as fuck. All right. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, so it had been out for a bit and had become basically the game changer in animation at the time, unfortunately. But I don't know if you remember this, Ariel, but like this also was a period where Disney was kind of hated by everybody. Like everybody was dunking on Disney for being kind of like lame and cheesy. And I guess, and you know, if you remember, like half of Shrek was just them making fun of Disney and Disney World.
Sure, yeah.
So I think part of this ad campaign was A, to kind of present a, because like the DreamWorks characters at this time at post Shrek were more indicative of Warner Brothers characters from back in the way back in the day than Disney characters. I think this was Disney trying to advertise a character that was more similar to that than their typical character, and I think that they were also trying to say like, hey, hey, we're in on the joke too. We're in on the, you hate Disney? Yeah, we kind of hate Disney too. Yeah, we're in on it.
You hate Disney? We hate ourselves.
So I think I think this is them trying to say like, we're definitely in on the joke. So we're all laughing. You're not laughing at us. We're laughing together type of deal. Meanwhile, you know, Stitch is really not like this at all. And it's, it actually would have been better to show Lilo doing this, honestly. I think that is actually closer to her.
Yeah.
Just randomly jumping on like Belle's face and just like deciding she's gonna whoop that ass.
I mean, she is the one who genuinely did that in the movie, so
in any event, this is speculation on my part. I don't know for sure. I haven't gotten any confirmation from like someone who was there. But that's what I would think. Like Disney's just trying to be hip. And I guess it worked. The idea was like, oh, it's the black sheep of the family. Even the poster on Wikipedia is just very indicative of like, this isn't your daddy's or your granddaddy's Disney film. It's just so weird. All right, so that's it. You know, considering I didn't have a ton of interesting background to talk about this film, I certainly talked a lot. So, Ario, I'm going to shut the hell up and just not even do my normal spiel. How about you just tell us what happened in this movie? I'm just going to sit here quietly for a while.
Okay. So, this movie takes place in space. It starts out at the Galactic Federation headquarters. I think it's like Planet Turo or something. And they're having this this hearing against Jumba, who seems to be like a mad scientist kind of character. And he has like genetically engineered a creature that is like seems to be just made to be a pure agent of chaos. That like that seems to be his only function. It's really unclear why he made this, because he doesn't necessarily, Jumba doesn't necessarily seem like he's trying to like legit like destroy anything, but he made this creature. So it's like, ah, this creature. So the creature is Stitch, which is only known as Experiment 626. He seems pretty bad. I mean, he says, I don't know, some kind of bad word in his language, and the the Grand Councilwoman is like, naughty. They decide that this...
My favorite thing about that was the robot council was throwing up bolts, the nuts and bolts, because he was so disgusted.
I gotta say, fun opening. Like, just this whole sequence, I was like, this movie is more fun than I thought it was. But they decide that he's too dangerous to just be allowed to exist in out in the world. So they decide to exile him. At first, I thought they decided to, like, kill him. They don't decide to kill him. They're going to exile him.
Still a Disney movie.
Yeah, still a Disney movie. And so, like, you know, they try, like, to lock him up, and they're going to take him somewhere. But he breaks out because he's, like, super strong and, like, impervious to everything and, like, all these things.
And smart.
And smart.
And smart.
Which they kind of ignore, the fact that he's smart. But anyway, he gets out and he, like, hijacks a little shuttle and he's just like, boo-hoo, pew-pew-pew. He ends up crashing on Earth. Unfortunately for everyone, he doesn't crash in water because reasons that are confusing. He's supposed to be, like, not good in water, but he lands on an island.
Yeah, I think they said specifically.
His molecular density is too great, which...
Yeah, I think it doesn't make a ton of real-world sense, but I think the idea in the movie is that he can't float, that he would just sink like a rock.
Okay.
Although, how they knew that, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and also, I don't know. He's very strong. He can swim. I don't actually see what the big deal is and why they thought it was just like, oh, if only he lands. Anyway, Stitch lands in Hawaii on an island, and the councilwoman for the Federation decides to send Jumba, who is the only person who really knows, like, you know, how to deal with this creature, and also Peekly, who is an underling in the Federation and has a knowledge of the planet, as it is a refuge for the endangered mosquito.
He's supposed to be the expert on Earth, and I really have a lot of follow-up questions that will never be answered.
Yeah, interesting stuff on that.
Actually, I got a lot of questions about this whole thing in general. I'll get to that when we get to this, when we talk about the movie.
So they go to try to find Stitch. Meanwhile, you have the character Lilo, who is a kid on the island, and her older sister Nani. They're dealing with the loss of their parents and trying to get through that, but also Nani has, like, essentially become Lilo's guardian, and she's young and it's hard to do, and they're having issues. They end up adopting Stitch because they think he's a dog. While they're trying to basically look good in front of the social workers, which fails, and then Stitch is trying to stay on the lam, but he's also an agent of chaos, and so it's a whole thing about, like, Lilo finding a friend and Stitch learning how to not be so, he's learning to be chaotic good instead of chaotic evil, like that kind of thing. And that's, you know, and Ohana, woo, you know, that's kind of like the long and short of it.
Yeah. Okay, so I just want to go ahead and just say flat out, I like this movie. Like this is definitely better than Atlantis, for sure. This is a stark improvement, and I can see why this film ended up, you know, being this big hit and big merchandiser. Stitch is definitely a fun, ridiculous character. Like that whole opening sequence where he escapes is fantastic. Yeah. Like that is such a great sequence. It's like, I don't think he's in the vent anymore as he drives away in a kind of space cop car. Yeah,
it's very cute. I even like his little jumpsuit. He's cute.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, I totally like it. Here's the thing. I don't have a ton of things to say about this movie. I think it's just a pleasant film.
Yeah.
For the most part. Like See, it's funny. I don't like Lilo too much. I guess we're supposed to understand that, like, the loss of her parents has really kind of caused her antisocial nature to really just power up. But I kind of often find her, like, to be very short-sighted. She's a little kid, too. But she's, like, she does things and is then surprised about the horrible consequences that happens, even though what she did was kind of nutty.
I found it, like, in relation to that, I find it unclear how old she is supposed to be. And...
Yeah.
Because she's toddler-shaped. And they often carry her around as if she is a bebé. But she also seems to be older in a lot of ways, like the way she does things, but also all the crap with her and the social worker and various short-sightedness like stuff related to that. It is,
she nailed the door. Yeah. Shut. Like what, like, the heck?
Also in relation to the social worker, that whole thing is a little like, I'm trying to remember that this is like just a cartoon, but this is like, I don't think this is like, this is not the way things are handled. and all I kept thinking was like, why doesn't Lilo have a counselor? Like, there is no way that this, like, whatever social worker there's no way that they would not provide her with some kind of counselor. Her parents died. Like, that would be part of things. Like, they're like, you can't, it's this whole scenario feels like no one is acknowledging the fact that this is siblings trying to deal with what I assume has to be recently dead parents, because the picture, their family picture, she looks the same size. And so, like, it's a little confusing.
Also, it's weird because, like, Nani clearly leaves her alone.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like, she can't be that small because, yeah, she is left alone quite a bit.
Yeah, like, the opening sequence, she's just, like, hanging out at the beach, feeding sandwiches to fish, and with no sight of a guardian.
And even the teacher, which I also found very weird, because, so, like, the opening sequence, like, she's at, like, a dance class thing, and her grief rage comes out, and she gets into a tussle with one of the other kids, and, like, the teacher guy is like, I called your sister, and then he bounces, like...
Yeah, he's just like, I got places to
be. Like, he is not concerned about whether this child gets picked up. He just calls her sister, is like, well, it's her fucking problem now. I gotta go surf, I guess. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
You know, so, okay, we're already talking about this, so I'll just go into it a bit more. Like, this, like, negativity of stuff in here that has some problems I have. Because I didn't have a ton of issues with this movie. But there were some things that kind of weirded me out. And one of them was... like, how similar is this world supposed to be to reality? Like, in a lot of Disney films, it doesn't matter because, you know, animals don't talk, right? Or, like, this is obviously a Rubber Band Man cartoon, like Emperor's New Groove was, right? Like, this is obviously not supposed to be steeped in realism. But this is a contemporary film. Things aren't that wacky here. Like, nothing, no one's even breaking out into, like, musical songs. So it's not even a musical, right? So it seems like it's theoretically pretty down to earth, with the exception of the alien stuff. And that's supposed to be kind of where the humor of the story kind of bases itself around.
And inherently, aliens are not down to earth.
Yeah. Yeah, I said what I said. I was constantly confused by like how the folks in this world behaved, because they behaved not really like humans. And some of the stuff that you're talking about with like the way Lilo is like treated in terms of like, you know, not getting the support she needed, adults just kind of being like, well, good luck, and then walking away. But it's also some other stuff, like some like weirder stuff, like no one is impressed by the fact that a dog can play the like, there's several sequences where Lilo teaches Stitch how to play, and Stitch is a natural, and he's just playing, and the chaos comes because, like, I think in one scene, he breaks windows with how high-pitched he gets,
yeah.
I suppose. I guess there is a scene where a bunch of people, like, find him interesting because he's playing guitar, but he's also dressed as Elvis for a while. He's standing up on two legs dressed as Elvis, and no one seems to... be that impressed with a dog doing that.
Yeah.
So that's a little
their
weird.
Reaction feels more of the level like, ooh, someone's putting on a show on the beach, as opposed to, holy crap, this animal is like doing and playing the ukulele.
Also, in similar notion, which didn't make any sense to me, so how Stitch gets into a situation where he gets adopted as a pet by Lilo is that he gets hit by a truck and apparently they think he's dead. and they call someone to take care of it. I guess the adoption place is also the pound / animal control. I guess it's a small island. I guess it can be all those things. But when Lilo sees Stitch, who's at this point is now trying to present himself as an animal so he can use Lilo as a living shield against Dr. Jumba. Yeah. But the person running the place is shocked to see Stitch because she said he was dead this morning. He was a dead dog this morning. But just seconds ago, Stitch wakes up in a kennel with a bunch of other dogs. So you mean to tell me that this person found a dog corpse under a truck and just tossed it in with another bunch of alive dogs and just like, yeah, well, my job's done.
Here's the thing about this, because like I recently watched The Thing for the first time.
No, that's what happens when you've got a boyfriend.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's very much my boyfriend made me watch. He didn't make me watch, but my boyfriend had me watch The Thing because it was the first proper snow of the year. So his first inclination was that I needed to be afraid.
I will change that and say it's a spouse thing. It's a movie that your spouse will make you watch if they're into horror films. Not necessarily a boyfriend thing. It could be a girlfriend
thing. It is
plenty of ladies.
It is very much a partner thing for someone to be like, I watch it. But anyway, the point is, it made me think of that because near the beginning, they're like the alien thing presents itself as a dog, and they put it in the kennel with the other like huskies, and the other dogs are just like, wait a minute, and then it starts going nuts and they're like, wait a minute, and and it made me think of that, and I'm just like, God, Stitch is so dangerous. Like this could have been it. This, I don't know if the creators went out of their way to make like a low-key the thing reference with that scenario, but it made me think of that.
It's just possible that it might be a reference. I actually have yet to see The Thing all the way through, and I don't plan on doing that.
I prefer the board game. I enjoy playing the board game.
I prefer Ben Grimm.
That's the only thing any of us need.
Like, unless The Thing is cracking his knuckles and saying, it's clobbering time! I don't know why he's cockney in there. He should be from New York. I'm not sure what's going on there. But that's the only thing I like. Even so, I think it's weird that they threw a dog corpse into the kennel with the other dogs.
Yeah, I don't think that's how that works.
It's really odd to me. And there's like a lot of little things like that throughout the film, mostly involving people's reaction to Stitch. And it kind of took me out of things a little bit.
Before we leave the kennel, I just want to, because this is another example of like, why are people like this? The lady working at the kennel dog control place, you know, they adopt Stitch, and then she asks what she wants to name it, you know, to put it on like the certificate, and like Lilo says Stitch, and the lady's like, well, that's not a real name, and like Nani has to like hush her and be like, I mean, that's a perfectly good name for a dog. And it's like, what the fuck, why would you ever who care, that's not a real name, it's a dog. Who cares about what a kid names a dog? Stitch does sound like a dog's name. It was just like, it's like little things like that. And like, once again, I enjoy this movie. I'm not saying but little things like that. It's just like, why is that even here? Just weird.
Well, first of all, I'll say there are people like that in the real world, and they suck. A lot of people get really specific of what they think is the appropriate name for pets. And if you get out of that parameter, they'll let you know that's wrong, and that's weird. In the context of the movie, the movie does kind of go out of its way to make Lilo look very strange, and not all of them feel natural, and that's a good example of it. But another example is how, like, you know, she goes to dance class and she's up in the middle soaking wet, and she makes the floor so wet that the dance already in progress is ruined because everyone starts slipping. Why did the director not stop them as soon as she showed up? And it was like, oh, Lilo's here. Let's reset from the beginning now that she's here.
It definitely seemed like a rehearsal, not a performance.
Yeah, it was definitely not a show. And It was probably a class, in fact, not even like a, like a, like, but like, but he's a, but it's all like, oh, well, you're, let's just keep going. Oh, you've ruined it. Why are you late? It seemed to have been like, okay, stop, stop. All right, Lilo, you're late. Dry off. We'll reset from the beginning. That guy's bad at his job. Also, he left her to die on the porch.
Yeah,
like, I mean, just seconds later, so.
Yeah. Because, like, there also is, like, once again, how old is she?
Yeah.
Because, like, the idea that she's just, like, showing up randomly on her own after, like, exploring the water, like, why that is not more of a concern. And I know, like, I know that has to do with, like, part of me is looking through a city person's lens, where, like, the idea of just, like, a kid hanging out random places before they go to school sounds, like, dangerous, but...
All right, I'm just gonna shoot out one more thing that I had a little bit of a problem with, and then we can just kind of talk about whatever. But I just wanted to point out that I think the interaction between the aliens, and specifically Agent Bubbles, really confused me.
Yeah.
As, first of all, he knew the Grand Councilwoman. She recognized him.
Yeah, he had, like, hair back in the day.
Yeah, I remember you from... Yeah, because the joke is like, he's this really huge black guy who looks like he's supposed to be a secret agent rather than a social worker. And then at the end of the movie, it turns out that he was with the CIA and was involved with the Roswell UFO incident. That's the joke. But... the fact that he knew the Grand Councilwoman from the 70s means that she has been to Earth. How is it that no one knows anything about Earth when they realize that Stitch is going there?
They literally called it ER.
Yeah, and he's in like, what, Pleakley? What is that? What is Kevin McDonald's character's name?
I can't remember how they pronounced it. I saw her saying Pleakley, but I don't remember how they said it.
Okay, well... apparently his first name is Wendy. I don't remember them saying that at all. But he is all like, "Oh, Earth is a protected environment for mosquitoes," and which turns out not to be true, because at the end of the movie, it turns out that Bubbles says, like, "Oh, I saved the planet once, convinced the aliens that the mosquitoes were an endangered species," which is a bunch of questions that I know I'm not going to get answered. But one thing that really kind of struck me is that, why does none of this sound familiar to the Grand Councilwoman? Why did she, yeah. Why was this like, oh, mosquitoes, that's the dominant species on the planet? And then it's like, oh, wait, Earth, right. Yeah, they're humans, but they're super primitive. Like, oh, but wait a second. I had a conversation with that one guy, Bubbles. Maybe I should go because I know people there. Like, this does not come up. It's kind of like, It's a joke at the end of the film that retroactively makes the beginning of the film make less sense. It also bothers me.
Well, it also makes, like, Bubbles' interactions with them make, like, because I would think that he would be able to tell that this thing is not terrestrial. Like, because even if for some reason everyone just thinks it's a weird blue dog, I think he would know, and like, considering like what he keeps seeing it do, he should know that this is not of Earth, and he does fucking nothing about that, and is so concerned about like making sure that he catches this one chick so he can take away her sister. And it's just like, I'm sorry, why are you ignoring this obvious alien that is in this household? You keep acting like you're concerned for this child safety, yet you're letting her hang out with this alien thing. What's going on there?
Yeah, I'm willing to bet that Bubbles is actually just bad at his job. He's a former CIA agent. Why is he with the CIA anymore?
Going from the CIA to social work is telling, because he definitely doesn't. He's not warm. This doesn't seem like a thing where it's just like, you know what? I actually prefer helping people, so I switched to social work. That is not the fucking vibe I get from this guy. So I guess maybe it is that he was fired and this is all he could get.
I'm willing to bet that he was a bad CIA agent. He's definitely a bad social worker for sure.
He is like, social worker. Yeah. The idea that he's the ringer, like they're that whole statement is dumb. It's like, they're who I bring in when things get bad. It's like, if things get bad, you take legal action. You don't get a meaner social worker. Like, what? Yeah, what is this? Like, that's like you bring in law enforcement when things are bad, not a sturdy bodyguard social worker.
I kept waiting for there to be a reveal that he was never the social worker, that he was always an agent, and the only reason he was there was that they had gotten wind that there was an alien coming. Although the timing doesn't quite work because Stitch does not come to the scene until after his first visit. But I kept waiting to be like him being like, experiment 626, time for you to go back where you came from. No, nothing like that happens. He's just a social worker.
That would have been so much better. It would have made a lot more sense because the whole thing with him as a social worker, it really does not make sense.
All right. We kind of got a little on the side, on a vent on there. Is there anything else that you didn't like about this film? Because I kind of want to go back to talking about things that I did like about the film.
I mean, I don't know. Something might randomly come up, but like, in relation to Bubbles, because he says that he expects the dog to be a model citizen, and that seems to be a new caveat to like the success of their household. What does that mean for the dog to be a model citizen? It's like not even that, like, not that,
you like the this, dog to have a job.
Yeah, it's like a suit. Not that. This dog better be well trained, which anyone who has a dog knows that is like, well, you're not gonna like train this like dog who you don't know its background in like 2 days if it's already like has behavioral issues. And also like, yeah, this dog better be a model citizen. Like, it already seems like he's not really looking at this dog as a dog. It's just confusing.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to go back a little bit about the good stuff about this movie, because I think the movie, because all the negative stuff I said is actually kind of almost, I don't want to say nitpicking, but it's stuff that didn't take away from the movie for me. Like, it's, I thought the movie, yeah, I think it's a fun movie. I think it's I think the whole family is what you make, not necessarily, like, you know, like anything can be family.
Yeah, like the idea of your chosen family having as much value as any other kind of family. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's good. I think maybe Stitch kind of comes around a little quicker, like than he maybe should. Maybe there's like, I feel like maybe we might be missing like a couple minutes as he does. I don't want to say he comes around super quickly, but like, I guess I could have gotten a little bit more character development that way. Mm. I guess something I could have used. Not enough, but it was fine. I think they explain it without explaining it. Like, you know, he's obviously having like some sort of reaction to the fact that he has one directive and he can't really do it.
Yeah. But I gotta say, Lilo is so much more tolerant of him than I would have been. He could have, yeah, like, by that second push, I would have, like, as a child, I would have been like, get this fucker out of here. You're fucking pushing me? I don't, absolutely not. I don't want him.
Well, you know, Lilo is eccentric, as Wikipedia says, and she doesn't have any friends, so her tolerance is probably just a lot higher than yours would have been as a kid, because you had friends
who rarely pushed me.
Yeah, rarely pushed you. I had friends who punched me in the stomach and then made me go on a roller coaster. Anyway,
God, you're sometimes your youth sounds like a British schoolboy shit. Just sounds very unsavory.
Yeah, did I tell you about the time I got tied to a rope and then dragged around the school?
God. Anyway, Lilo.
I think it's good. I think the characters are basically all right. I don't think there's any glaring things. I will say that the Gantu guy, apparently, I think he's fine in this film. I think as the franchise goes on, I think he might be a little weirder. Like, he's apparently the primary villain of the franchise.
Oh.
But you wouldn't know that looking at this. He just seems like he's an antagonist. That's the thing about this film. There's not really a villain.
Yeah.
There's antagonistic forces, but they're also kind of reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, I don't mean to keep...
I mean, when I say reasonable, I specifically mean their motivations make sense. Like, it's a dangerous alien, it's a dangerous science experiment gone wrong. loose on an alien planet, they gotta do something about it.
Yeah, because, like, I don't mean to keep bringing up, like, you know, good, evil, chaotic, but, like, I don't know. I feel like it fits well for Stitch, but, like, with Gantu, I mean, like, I don't even think he's lawful. I mean, I don't think he's lawful evil. Like, I think he's just lawful.
He's lawful neutral, probably.
Yeah, like, I don't think anyone's really doing anything. I mean, I don't, I'm still kind of confused about, like, Jumba, but, like...
Yeah, I mean, like, Jumba seems like he... Okay, so...
It's hard to tell he's, like, Russian, so it's hard to tell his level of evil.
We can talk more about Jumba and the characters, because I do have something to say about him. But I will say, like, you know, the very next thing says the... Like, when I was watching this on Disney Plus, like, I believe it's advertising. It's trying to take me to Stitch the movie, and it says like, "Can Stitch get away from the evil Gantu?" And I remember thinking like, "Wait, what? This is not really a villain in this." And I'm wondering if this is like the first Disney film to not have a proper villain. We've seen some mediocre villains in the last couple of Disney movies that we watched. I haven't seen Dinosaur, so I have no idea. Maybe there's not a villain there either.
I mean, but like, the villain in that might be a meteor. I'm not sure.
I don't know. I have not watched that movie. This is extremely common now. Like, Disney seems to be especially trying to get away from the idea of having villains in their movies. I'm not 100% certain why, but this might be the first instance of it. And it works in this film. It just not like it doesn't work in other films either. I don't know where you could fit an eccentric villain singing a villain song in this film as it is. So I think it's actually just as well.
Yeah.
Honestly speaking, I don't really have a ton to say about this movie. I think it was fine. I didn't actually think it was better than fine. It was a very enjoyable, fun film. Better than I expected. I might have more to say specifically about certain characters, but I don't really have much more to say about the movie itself.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the humor is very fun. It's a little bit. It has like these little bits that are fun, like how we were talking about, like, you know, the stuff with Stitch somehow swearing in some kind of way and their reaction, blah blah, and like, you know. Pleckley and Jumba, like, you know, like fighting over the wig, and like things like that. Like they're fun little bits that I think do well that are not super Disney-ish.
I like the sequence at the kennel / pound / adoption place where Lilo insists on buying Stitch herself. And so she's like, "Can I borrow $2?" So Nani is about to hand the $2 to the lady at the desk, and Lilo's like, "I want to buy him. Can I borrow $2?" So she takes Nani, hands Lilo the $2. Lilo cannot reach the other lady, so she hands the $2 back to Nani, who then hands it back to the person at the desk. I thought that sequence. I'm not doing it justice to talking about it, but I thought that sequence was pretty goddamn funny
and very, for me, very relatable. Like it makes me think of like being like going to church and being like, I want to put money down for offering, and then like basically immediately taking a dollar from our mom to bring it to the offering. It's like God's gonna definitely know that this dollar is from me and not immediately from mom.
It'd be like if you did that and then also asked mom to put the dollar in the offering plate as well.
Yeah, it's like, oh, actually, super. Yeah,
it's like, yeah.
And when Stitch is like wrecking her bedroom and stuff, and he goes to like tear her painting, and it's like, it looks like it's like a Picasso. She's like, "No, that's from my blue period." And he tears it.
That was great.
Like,
that was great.
Yeah, like there's a lot of fun bits.
Yeah, this is a cleverly written movie. The script has issues, but I think generally speaking, it's good. I think it's better than a lot of the more recent offerings at the time. Like, I think this movie is head and shoulders above Tarzan.
Oh, my other fun moment that gave me a giggle when they first meet off Bubbles. Cobra Bubbles, and she acknowledges the fact that he has a cobra tattooed on his knuckles, and he's like trying to introduce himself as a social worker, and she's all like, "Have you killed anyone?" And he just goes, "We're getting off subject." And like, yes. that's fun.
No, that's very fun. So let's talk about characters. So Lilo, who is definitely now a white character, played by young white actress, either Davey or Davey Chase. I'm not 100% certain which one it is. A child actress at the time does the voice of Lilo. Weird thing about that particular actress is that she's no longer active. Like, she hasn't been active since 2016 at best. And also she, you know, sounds like she had kind of a rough go of it in like the years when her career was kind of coming down to an end. But is white. And is a little odd choice to play Lilo, but I think she's perfectly fine. I think she does a pretty good job as like the eccentric, as Wikipedia says, Lilo.
I find it very interesting also that, like, so this is like, I mean, came out in 2002, but she was also in The Ring in Donnie yeah. Darko around the same time. And I was like, so this is like your light fare that you got to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Lilo more as a double act with Stitch, where on her own, I think that she's just kind of... I kind of went into this a little bit, but she's a little perplexing with like stuff that she does. And again, you know, we've established that, you know, she is a wounded girl who is not getting the support that she needs. She keeps doing things and then it's like, what do you mean this is breaking up the family? This is all Stitch's fault. And it's like, well, you did nail your sister out of the house and then do a lot of screaming.
Yeah.
And fighting. I don't know. It's like, again, don't know how old she is. She seems old enough to take care of herself, though. And she's old enough to take care of herself. She should be old enough to understand that you have to play ball with optics in order to make sure no one gets sent to an orphanage.
Yeah, she's old enough to be able to go like, I need to make a PB&J sandwich. I am going to go to the store by myself and get peanut butter to make it and do my errand that I do all the time. Like, that's pretty sophisticated. She must be a little bit older to do that. And so that's a little confusing. Also, I don't know what to do about the gag about her like constantly like taking pictures of fat people and having her like collage and what's yeah. going on with that.
Yeah, this is a lot of weird stuff with her. But I do like her her interactions with Stitch. I like her idea of trying to make him a model citizen is trying to make him Elvis.
Yeah.
Because he's obsessed with Elvis.
Very interesting reasoning.
Yeah, no, I do like that. But there's not a ton to talk honestly, there's not a ton to talk about most of the characters.
I also like her doll.
But oh, yeah, the one where she says is, like, talks about how, like, it's like she's dying.
She just, like, don't be rough with her. She recently had surgery.
Yeah, I like the sequence where, like, she kind of, I think the doll gets thrown down and she, after, like, when the girls make fun of her and she ends up storming off angry. And then she comes back in the shot, grabs the doll, hugs the doll, then leaves. I thought that was cute.
Once again, because you know me, I felt that because I literally yesterday watching that, I was like, no, oh good. Like, I was afraid that she had left the doll.
Yeah, all right, let's kind of like dash through this stuff because we don't have a ton of time. So Chris Saunders, who's the director, also does the voice of Stitch. He only directs this. He does not direct anything else in the franchise, but he is always Stitch. He has played Stitch in every English thing that's done, and he's apparently set to play Stitch again because they're going to make a live action remake of this, because of course they are.
Oh boy, we need to fucking stop. aren't these live action movies not doing well enough to like keep doing?
No, because they'll have like two that don't do well, and then the third one will make like $1 billion, justifying their existence. Mm. And that seems to be like the pattern. I like Stitch a lot, actually. I talked about it like a good chunk, but you know, basically, you know, the idea that he's they kind of undermine how smart he is, but I just like how like they see that this gremlin for like the first part of the movie, but then like after like the first act, he kind of calms down and is just kind of like this kind of just weirdo character. I like that he plays guitar. It's weird to me that he doesn't talk more. Like, he apparently figures out English fairly quickly, but he doesn't really start talking until the end of the film. That's not really a problem. It's just something weird that I know. He's a blue koala-like creature, Wikipedia says.
I mean, Nani does think that he must be some kind of weird koala. I personally like it when he talks less. I don't really like... Or, like, when he's just, like, talking in whatever language he usually talks in. When he talks a lot in English, I don't actually like it.
Mm. I think I'm just kind of like, I like the scene where Nani is like, I speak, I know you can. He's like, all right, okay.
I think that's fun. But when he's giving of, like, his, like, final speech and stuff, I'm just like,
oh. The final speech is necessary because it needs to tie everything up. But it's... I like that a lot less than when he convinces Jumba to switch sides, just like with like okay, I'm in. he's very persuasive, but yeah, I like Stitch. I would have been more interested in seeing more with the character in other things, but I'm not going to because I know how the quality is not super good with the things that currently exist.
But when in doubt, he's gonna show his butt and mock you from afar.
Right. Oh, yeah, he does that a lot.
He rubs his butt on a lot of windows.
So I'm probably pronouncing this wrong, but Tia Carrere, who plays Nani, and then also Jason Scott Lee, who plays David, the guy who has a crush on her, like, they are the only Hawaiians in this. Like, I'm not sure why Lilo is not played by a Hawaiian actress. This is odd to me.
I feel like the
other two are...
I feel like so often they'll do that. Like, I feel like a lot of times where they try to make things like a little bit more specific, they'll do it with the adults and just be like, I don't know, some kid to be the kid. Like, I feel like that is often the pattern.
But basically the two human supporting characters, you know, they're mostly there to set a bit of normalcy. Like, they're the straight people to the rest of the eccentric cast. I find Nani's parenting to be a little, maybe not good, but it also kind of depends on exactly how old Lilo is. He does leave Lilo alone a lot, and I don't know.
Well, part of that is, like, I wonder how old Nani is, because I am under the impression that she is, like, technically, like, she is an adult in the eyes of the law and old enough to be a guardian. But I'm under the impression
she is the youngest that you could possibly be to legally have guardianship over somebody else. Whether that's 18 or 21, I think it's that.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it. It's just like, she doesn't know how to parent because she literally has...
She's a big sister.
Yeah. And like, considering that she's of that... Considering that age difference, I don't even know how close they might have been, like, really... before this?
I don't know. They have some sequences and interactions that seem like it's reminiscent of what life between them would have been like before
their parents died. Like, without having the buffer of the parents?
Yeah, like, it was like when Nani lays on top of Lilo and just like just becomes dead weight. It's like, oh, I'm so heavy.
Oh, sure.
And that just seems like that seems like typical. I've got the feeling that was like kind of how their relationship was before this all happened. Like, she was kind of like a sisters annoying each other in their different roles. It's just that for Nani now, the stakes are just too high to suffer Lilo's bullshit. Is what I assume.
And like, I'm not saying that in a strange kind of way, but just as like, it's a pretty big age difference, and I'm guessing they weren't necessarily, you know, super close.
Well, I'm saying I think they actually might have been closer than we think. Is what I'm saying.
Before, like, we move on, I just want to shout out that Tia Carrere, if that's how, I don't, not 100% sure that's how you pronounce her name, but she was in Wayne's World. She was like,
the lead, yeah. The female lead in that?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wait a dang second. Like, the thing I saw about this suggested that she was, they said they'd hired young actors to be in this, but she would have actually been a grown-ass woman by 2000.
Oh, yeah. That's a funny statement that they made, because she doesn't, I mean, she sounds like a grown-ass woman.
Yeah. I was thinking that she might have been someone in her early 20s or something, but no, she would have been, like, probably closer to her early 30s, if not older. At the time. You know what? It's 20 years ago. She's 56 now. So she was in her mid-20s. Her mid-30s.
Yeah, that sounds
at the time. So that's not someone who I'd describe as a young actress. Okay. I don't think we need to talk about every single character, because then it's not a whole lot to everybody, and we've kind of talked about a lot of them. But I do think we got to talk about Dr. Jumba, played by our old friend David Ogden Stiers, who now comes to his destiny of playing a lead character in one of these films after like three straight films of him being like a supporting character.
Yeah.
Now is his time to shine. Like, oh, I'll have a bit part here, or I guess I'm playing the priest here in the background not doing much. No, here he is the main antagonist, and as you said, Russian voiced.
Yeah. I was going to say that.
But
he's been a main antagonist before. He was Governor Ratcliffe in Pocahontas.
Oh, right. No, yeah. For some reason, I blanked on that one. Yes, he was way more of a villain in that. And he was another queer-coded Disney villain in that situation.
So evil. So fabulous.
I think the character is fun. I think a lot of the dialogue he says is fun. I think his performance is very fun. I don't understand this character's motivation whatsoever. Yeah. It seems like his only thing is that he just wanted to make... He created something unstoppable and unkillable who only wants to cause destruction to see if he could. Like, he was just like, could I do this? Oh, I can. Great. Let's see what happens next. Like, he doesn't seem to care. Like, he's only attempting to bring him down because he's been offered a pardon, which I guess he just gets, like, at the end of the film. They don't take him back to jail.
I do find it funny, like, when he finally, like, approaches Stitch and he's about to you know, shoot. He's like, you know, I don't want to hurt you. You were expensive. And I find that... Like, the dynamic is interesting.
No, I really like the game of cat and also cat that they play.
Against each other. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah. It's already Merry Christmas. It's already Christmas.
Yeah, how do they know about any of this?
Yeah, like
how do
they know about... Yeah, like the fact that like freaking Stitch said Happy Hanukkah. I was like, oh my god. And the cute little one potato two potato.
I wish they had said Happy Hanukkah. I'm not Jewish. Kevin McDonald plays the other guy, Pleakley or whatever. He's, you know, like Kids in the Hall guy.
Yeah.
Like, very famous in a lot of avenues for his time there and his various comedy performances and voice actor performances that he's done.
I prefer him, if I'm thinking about cartoon voices, as one of the almighty tallest in Invader Zim.
Yeah. Ving Rhames, basically playing Ving Rhames as a cartoon character here.
Yeah.
Like I think we've kind of talked about all we need to talk about Bubbles. Like, we got a good understanding of that. It's not super important. But I do want to revisit Gantu very quickly, because there's Kevin Michael Richardson.
Vashti!
I cannot remember what we were talking about with him before, because I know we brought him up before, but I can't remember what we were watching that he was there in. Like, but this is not the first time we've talked about Vashti here on this podcast. If anyone remembers offhand, feel free to shoot us a little note to remind us.
I mean, he's
in so many things.
So many things. Like, I can't remember what specifically we might have been talking about. Because, like, yeah, the amount of credits this dude has is exhausting.
Yeah. Very recognizable voice most of the time. Really like the guy.
Grand Councilwoman. I just want to shout out Zoe Caldwell. She is a very successful stage actress, and she actually won multiple Tony Awards, including for the play Masterclass. She was in the original production of that in the 90s. And I don't know, it's just for theater heads out there.
Yeah. She just passed away like 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I should say.
Yeah. Relatively recent.
Yeah.
She's also Australian.
Yeah. Actually. That seems like a lot of Australian actors end up spending their entire career voicing characters with British accents. I'm not sure how that works. Another scene that I really liked, there's a lot of sequences in this movie that are more subtle comedy that I really love. And one of my favorite ones is at the end of the movie when they're wrapping up and she and her crew are going back on the spaceship, and then they pass the two bumbling aliens who she sent to capture in the first place. They just kind of look at her, they're kind of waving like, hey. And she whispers to her subordinate, don't let those two on my ship. So it's not like you're banished or you're under arrest. It's just like, I don't want to deal with them anymore. And so I won't. This is not a musical, so there's not really much we need to talk about in terms of music, although I believe, can I verify that really fast?
Alan Silvestri.
Yeah, Alan Silvestri.
Which you all will know from Back to the Future and The Avengers.
Yeah, he did a lot of things, including Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Forrest Gump, and everyone's favorite film, Ready Player One. But honestly, the most memorable music from this is when they have Elvis, and there's a lot of Elvis in this film because of Elvis's connection to Hawaii. Although I'm really curious to hear from a native Hawaiian, like how much natives actually give a shit about Elvis.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Maybe it's a lot, but I would not be surprised if that's just like a white person thing.
Yeah, like tourist shit that has kind of been put upon. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else that you want to touch on before we wrap things up?
Oh, well, I do want to mention that just the look of Nani. I feel like this is one of those like early examples of portraying a character who isn't like a female character who isn't like super thin. Like she actually like has a body that has like big old thighs, and like her belly kind of goes over her pants a little bit, and she's like an actual, she feels like a more like realistic human. And I know that there's been kind of talk about like, yeah, it's kind of nice to see someone like a cartoon character portrayed as just not this like perfect slender thing, because she's like absolutely beautiful and she's not a stick, and it's like, well, nice. Like
from my point of view, like, you know, like the female lead from Road to El Dorado was also kind of on the thick side, not in the same way, but the thing that really makes me that really gets to me is that this might be the first time we're not seeing like brown sexy lady.
Yeah, I was also thinking about that in regards to like Disney, not just.
Oh yeah, I was just thinking about animation because unfortunately it's not just a Disney thing. Like Disney, like other companies do it as well.
Yeah, it's not like this like, mystic brown woman who blah blah blah. Like she is a person.
She doesn't crawl on all fours at all. The whole course of this film.
Good sweet joke.
However, if this wasn't contemporary, would she have?
Well, you know what? We don't have to worry about it because that is not the scenario.
Right.
And we'll just hope that it would be fine.
Yep. Okay. All right, Ariel. Let's wrap things up here. So what would you give Lilo and Stitch? A thumbs up, a thumbs down, or a thumb somewhere in the middle?
I'd give it a thumbs up. I don't think I necessarily will go out of my way to like watch this for funsies, but like, I think it's good. I think it's fine. I can see why it was popular, and at like we said, as like as far as like this era goes, it's like, yeah, this is legit enjoyable.
Yeah. I give it a thumbs up as well. I think I might like it a little bit more than you, because I think I would actually throw this on at some point, just maybe as a background thing, because there's a lot of stuff in there that I like. It's still a very good looking film. We're still Disney as the top notch 2D animators in the world right now. So like, it's definitely a very gorgeous film. We didn't talk too much about how gorgeous it looks, but it's a good looking film. And I think I would definitely enjoy having that on in the background. I don't know how much interest I have in watching any of the other movies
or TV shows. I can't imagine that they're good.
I know that Lilo and Stitch 2, Stitch has a glitch, which is the one that came out later, but is actually supposed to take place before. That one actually has a budget that is slightly more comparable to this, even though it's still straight to video. The other ones are just TV budget, look like shit. It's basically, the whole premise of it is like, gotta catch them all, because they're chasing down Lilo's 625 cousins.
Yeah, that sounds like I do now wonder if that Stitch ride is still at Disney World. Because I feel like they're often replacing ride themes for others with like different movies always being made, and I do wonder if the from what I remember, it's like that was a cute ride.
Well
it kind of galactic. I could look it up. I know
a lot but of the time kind of, Disney is not super quick to replace rides. Like the Song of the South ride was there for many many decades until very recently. Like Splash Mountain.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it's still there. If it's not there, I also wouldn't be surprised if it's been turned into a Guardians of the Galaxy ride. That seems to be what happens.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, not that it's, like, gone, but if it's still, like, a Stitch.
No, I get it. I'm just specifically calling out Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. That seems to be what happens. Okay, cool.
It's like, instead of seeing, because there was, like, a thing where it's, like, you could see Stitch in a little container. He's like, rah! And I was like, oh yeah, you just replace that with Rocket, and you're just...
Yeah. You don't even have to cut back the swearing. You just have to translate it. anyway, all right. I think that's going to do it for us this week. So next week we are going to finish off our Disney marathon here with Treasure Planet, yet another bomb. A considerably bigger. I think it's the biggest bomb of this era. I think Treasure Planet is the movie that convinced Disney that 2D animation might not be the way to go anymore. I've only seen this movie once. I don't really remember much about it, but I'm obviously familiar with the source material, Treasure Island. Yeah. So I guess I understand the basic plot.
We did own it in our household.
Yeah, I only saw it one time. I swear to God, I saw it in... Okay, we'll talk about it later, but I'm very confident that I never, ever once saw it at our parents' house. I saw it elsewhere.
Oh, that's funny.
It does have Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who is one of my favorite actors. So, you know, JGL, looking forward to seeing him in action. but yeah, we'll talk more about that. I'm sure that there'll be... There probably isn't a documentary on there the way there was for Emperor's New Groove. Like, God, I wish there was. I'd be so excited to watch that. But, you know, if you guys want to get a hold of us, you can make a request and all that stuff if you'd like. We'll see if we can do it. Email us at adultsiblingsversus@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at adultversus on Twitter. You can also reach out to us on Facebook. Our theme song was Sell Out by Zombie Apocalypse Now from the EP Forbidden Tales of Science. You can find that and more at antizombierock.bandcamp.com. Also, just so you guys know, I have recently restarted my nerd blog after discussion with my therapist. That blog has over 360 articles that I've written since 2010. So if you want to get my opinion on various nerdy things over the years, most of which are horribly out of date because I've not written anything in many years, you can find that. I recently put up a review of Black Adam, and I might have a top 10 movies of 2020 list, or excuse me, a top 10 movie list of 2022 by the time that you are listening to this. I don't know. But that is Beta Is Dead. So that's betaisdead.blogspot.com is the website for that if you want to check that out. All right. So I think that's going to do it for us this week. But Ariel, I did want to ask you, because I'm curious, as a person who does not own a pet, what do you think is the model citizen version of a dog?
I don't know. I think I would just, like, in my mind, I'm just like, could it cook for me?
You know, I don't need the dog to cook. I just need it to be my butler. I need a butler dog. That's the model citizen. All right. So we're
little tray on his back, and just like
Oh yeah, on his head, on his head, on his head. Like he can't talk, but when he makes the dog sound like more, you can just see the subtitle says your dinner, sir.
Oh, give him a little tie.
All right. So we're going to go down to the rescue kennel, see if we can get some dogs, and then immediately go to the nearest British dog training center. But until next time, as always, please do not put a dirty sock in your younger sibling's mouth.
Yeah. Ohana means family. And also, fruit punch.
I meant to mention that. I forgot to mention it.